Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 29th of June, Anno Domini 2013. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues.
I'm getting a nasty buzz. Is that just me?
Oh, man, I had a nasty buzz the other day.
What'd you drink on the way in?
I think it's just you. I'm not hearing it here, at least.
Yeah, because, at first I was only hearing on one side of my headphones, and I realized, the plug wasn't pushed in all the way.
Maybe that's why this headset was unplugged when I got here. It's got a nasty buzz in it.
Do you know the words?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's B music. Okay, your reputation as a tough, hard-nosed business go-getter may take a hit if you spend a lot of time using your little smartphone. A study conducted by researchers at Harvard Business School suggests that using devices with small screens can cause people to behave less assertively than those using large screens. Grounded in research showing that adopting expansive body postures increases psychological power, we hypothesize that working on larger devices, which forces people to physically expand, causes users to behave more assertively, reads the abstract of the paper titled Eye Posture: The Size of Electronic Consumer Devices Affects Our Behavior. The study used 75 participants who were randomly assigned to perform tasks on various devices. The researchers chose to go with Apple products, representing a range of sizes, though the results could be extrapolated to other brands. Participants used an iPod Touch, an iPad, a MacBook Pro, or an iMac. Once the tasks were finished, the researcher told the participants, "I will be back in 5 minutes to debrief you and then pay you so you can leave. If I am not here, please come get me at the front desk." The researcher then waited up to 10 minutes to return. Participants who had been using smaller devices took longer to go fetch the researcher than those using larger devices. The researchers traced this correlation to the body's posture people adapt when using devices. Smartphones and tablet users tend to hunch over their devices and contract their bodies. Desktop users tend to have a more open posture. Participants interacting with smaller devices were less assertive than participants interacting with larger devices, said the study. The paper concludes with a bit of advice. Many of us spend hours each day interacting with our electronic devices. In professional settings, we often use them to be efficient and productive. We may, however, lose sight of the impact the device itself has on our behavior, and as a result, will be less effective. We suggest that sometime before going into a meeting, and obviously also during it, you put your cell phone away. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org is your smartphone making you wussy? And the choices are yes, sigh, kinda, but not a lot. I don't know, and no way, you insensitive jerk. There you go. So far, we have 18 votes. Most of you are pretending to be assertive. That's very lovely for you. And of course, we know you'll have more to say about this. So once you're done with the poll, go down on the right-hand side. You'll see fascinating stuff that will take you to the forums, and you can check out the particular forum that we're talking about today, which is, of course, 29 June 2013. Is your smartphone making you wussy?
All I can say is I can't wait to get mine.
Yeah, I know. But apparently what they're saying is size matters.
Well, that's the Galaxy 5?
Yeah, it's a 5-inch screen.
Yeah. And I was looking at it. They were doing a demonstration on it. I was over at BJ's, and the girl stepped up there, and she was saying, "Now, set it down, and if somebody calls, you just swipe your hand across it. It automatically answers. Now, if you're watching a movie, I'm in a tablet, and Still don't get that one, but that's me.
Well, the big thing about that, of course, is you use up your entire data plan in about 15 minutes. I love how phone companies keep saying, the manufacturers keep saying, you can watch a movie. And the phone companies are saying, yeah, hell no. Not without paying us an awful lot of money.
Yeah, and, well, the thing about the Galaxy 5, though, is once you take your eyes away from it, it pauses it.
I do love that.
That's the neat thing about Android is that each new phone does more and more cooler things. Mm-hmm. And in the Android market, there's a new phone every month.
And see, that's where the Mac phones, iPhone is suffering.
The iPhone, it's once a year.
Yeah, because the iPhone is just hurting. I mean, there's really no, you know, big reason to go to the new iPhone 5. Other than what? Better camera, I think it is?
It's a bigger screen and a better camera. One of Apple's touting features is that you can still operate all the features on the phone with a single hand. So they made it taller but not wider, so when you're holding the phone, you can reach all the buttons with your thumb and operate it one-handedly.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, for a busy person on the go, you might need to have a one-handed phone, but most of us turn our phone sideways and use two thumbs.
Right. Or I just talk to mine now.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the last time I actually typed something.
Yeah, the speak part is recognition on it is phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And at least on the version of Android I'm using, it also has, it recognizes punctuation. So I can say, are we meeting today, question mark?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's why I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you
go. I still go back to the day, you know, when I had that one, and I remember it was here in the studio. I went to throw it over on onto the counter because Rob was texting me back and forth. And it was so frustrating because that's all you could do was one finger.
Yep.
You know, it was one of these flip-ups. And
right. So if you wanted a J, it was...
Yeah, so many times. And then if you passed it, oh, crap. Got so frustrated, I just threw it over, hit, and down. And I had to go get another phone.
And have never looked back.
Never.
Except for today.
Yeah, but no, again, you were the default.
It's my fault.
Because I was thinking about, you planted the seed when we were at the Soho show and getting that, that's not bad. And the way you came back that day, back to the booth, and you're lusting.
I was just having the best time.
I do this. I was talking to somebody else about cell phones and that.
Yep.
Because this person didn't want to get texting, can't be bothered with that and everything else. He uses it so much now for texting and everything. It's the only way to get a hold of him. It's like, dude, do you remember 3 years ago, I was telling you, oh, you got to get one. No way. No way not. He is the biggest texter going now.
Yep. Everybody texts. It's much easier.
But we got to go back to the old brick days.
Oh, yeah.
I was telling him how we were just talking about that, walking around with this huge brick.
It's 15 minutes of battery life.
It's in one of those most interesting men in the world commercials where I'm going off this giant phone. I had that phone. Maybe that means I'm interesting.
But not the most interesting. Okay.
Exactly, yeah. Oops.
All right, we should probably have been signed out. So that means this has stopped.
What?
I don't know what Google is doing, but it's making me a little insaner than I am.
Well, we should remind folks, you know, there's a lot of ways... Because somebody was stopped in the shop and was mentioning it, should mention that, yes, you know, if you can't listen to the radio, you can on your mobile devices get the app and listen to us there. If you want to on your phone, you can get the Jazz app, download that, put it on there. If you do have your laptop, you can hear us through the stream. And on our page, soundbites.org, that's with a Y, you can have a link. And if you want a real good scare, see us here live in the studio. And I still contend we have faces for radio.
We do.
And they should stay there.
We do. But we're on Ustream. We have a live hangout going on Google Plus. We have the IRC chat. We're doing a little bit of everything.
Yep.
And we're also talking to people on the phone. We have Blake from Batavia on the line. What's up, Blake?
Hello there, sirs.
Hi there. What's up?
Is the government recording this call?
Of course it is.
Oh, cool.
For our protection.
I got a couple things. First of all, is the security tangle still alive? Because I have a new computer and I'm trying to find out where to go to get it.
Securitytango.com.
Okay, I'll go there. That's one. Daughter's going to college and looking for kind of a printer for her. She's not really techie. She'll be like 2.5 hours away, so if it's not robust, I'm screwed. I have, in the past, given her a Kodak unit that's great on ink, but there's always issues elsewhere, and I'm not sticking with Kodak anymore, even though I worked for them for 25 years. I'm looking for an all-in-one that primarily the scan and the printing documents is probably the key. Faxing, printing pictures, don't care. Just needs to be reliable and robust.
Yeah, pretty much
I have a Canon MP830 here at home. Cost of ink kind of is bad because it dries out. But
yeah, generally speaking, what we're seeing is that unless you absolutely need to print a color photograph, get a black and white laser printer. The cost is a little bit higher for an all-in-one laser printer, about $200. If you want the scanning option, also it'll scan in color, but it only prints black and white. The consumable cost is much, much lower than with an ink printer. And what we generally see, it's a little more rugged. There's fewer moving parts. One of the problems with the inkjet printers is you've got hundreds of little nozzles that spray the ink.
I know.
And those ink nozzles get clogged up, and then you waste ink cleaning the heads.
But if a requirement tends to be color, then what? Because that means laser colors are like...
Laser color or inkjet color. But an inkjet printer, if you don't use it regularly, it will dry out. There's no...
I know.
It's kind of that catch-22. If you use it too much, you wear it out faster. If you don't use it enough, you clog it up, and then it's gone, too. The color laser is about $300. Color laser all-in-one is closer to $600, so that's generally not that inexpensive. But
5 hours of driving to fix something is what, you know?
Yeah. A lot of times...
Is there a place to go to help give me some sort of, is there a site for evaluating?
Oh, any of the magazines.
Any of the magazines, Tom's Hardware, all kinds of
PC
places.
Magazine. Go to PCMagazine.com.
PCMag.com.
Yep. Mag.com, and they do an impartial study and survey, sort of like the,
Consumer Reports even does their
sort
own.
Sort of like theirs. And, you know, nobody pays them to say good, bad, or whatever. At PC Mag.
Yeah. What you might want to check out is what they use at the college she's at, because that's going to be closer for her to get help. HP is a well-known, recognized brand, and so that tends to be pretty common. We find a lot of Brother printers are just as good as HP and a little cheaper. Brother's been in the fax machine business forever, and apparently someone realized that a fax machine is a printer.
Yep.
So they started marketing printers too.
Duh.
Right. One of the big things with inkjet is most of the cheaper models are 4-color, and you will find some that are 6-color, and they're photos. So if you know you're going to be printing photos, then you can look at a 6-color model, but they can be more costly to run because you got 6-color tanks. And actually, quickly before you run out here, a multicolor tank, so one tank with 3 colors, is much more expensive than finding a printer that has individual color tanks.
Right.
All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Come on.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can call us. The number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And speaking of phone numbers, a hacker has exploited Facebook's graph search to collect a database of thousands of phone numbers and Facebook users. Both parties agree that all the information was left public by users, even if the users themselves may still not realize it. But Facebook issued him a cease and desist after the hacker continued to scrape data and argued that the availability of the information invaded users' privacy. Brandon Copley, a mobile developer in Dallas, Texas, searched and downloaded 2.5 million entries of phone numbers from the social network. He says many of the entries are empty as they either aren't active numbers or aren't connected to a Facebook user with public settings. However, he notes that thousands of entries do match a phone number with the name of a Facebook user. A Facebook representative said that this is a feature of Graph Search and that this is a feature, not a bug, it's a feature, and that these users have their contact information set to public. Your privacy settings govern who can find you with search using the contact info you have provided, such as your email address and phone book number, the Facebook representative says. You can modify these settings at any time from the privacy settings page. Copley confirmed that those users have their contact information set to public, but argues this is still a security issue, just the way all of us have been arguing it. Facebook is denying its users the right to privacy by allowing our phone numbers to be publicly searchable as the default setting, Copley says. This means anyone with my number knows my Facebook confirmation and contact information. I may have not told my future employee about my Facebook account, but if I call them on my cell phone, they can now know how to find me on Facebook. Facebook admitted to a major security flaw regarding the Download Your Information tool on Friday afternoon that displayed the email and phone number of 6 million users. That's a security flaw, and Facebook admitted it. While similar in nature, Facebook says that flaw is unrelated to Copley's hack, which they say is not a security flaw. 6 million visible phone numbers is a security flaw. 2.5 million is not. So now we have a range that Facebook thinks of as security flaw.
Well, if they have a billion users, 6 million is such a tiny percentage, it's negligible.
It's negligible, hardly noticeable.
Yeah.
Unless you're one of those 6 million.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're one of them, you're going to be pretty porked off.
Right. On March 5th, Copley reported a tip to Facebook security, writing there was a security vulnerability that allows someone to essentially create a database of phone numbers and Facebook users. So are you still using Facebook? Why? Give us a call. Our numbers are public. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Although phone numbers are a pretty public thing with phone books and whatnot.
Yes.
But cell phone numbers aren't necessarily.
Yes. But what he's complaining about is that because the numbers are public by default, unless you know, and most Facebook users, not that savvy, unless you know to go change it, now someone can link your phone number with whatever information you're putting into Facebook, which you probably, some of it at least you want private, but don't know enough to do so.
Yep.
It's not that Facebook has that information, and it's not that people didn't put it in willingly. We all get that. It's that by default, the settings are make it public.
Right. And that's probably what we need to get everyone informed of is even though Facebook has privacy settings in there, ignore them. Anything you post on the internet will be public at some point. It may be not intentionally, maybe through a security leak or a hack, but anything you put on the internet will become public at some point.
Right.
And once it's there, it's there.
Yeah.
I told my godson, I tell my daughter the same thing. I said, look, I did stuff for which the statute of limitations still has not run out, but nobody had a camera.
It's,
you know, no.
Yeah, really.
There was nothing there. But now everything is there. Everything is there. And so you have to be awfully careful as to what you do, where to whom.
Well, like you say, employers. You know, it can put you in a very awkward position when you're going for this job and they go, oh, we saw that you were really a partier. And, you know, I mean, that all reflects.
It could reflect your insurance rates. That's the more insidious thing. You know, if you posted too many party pictures when you were young, you might have health problems in the future.
Yep. Well, and the other thing, too, is...
I see you're smoking in this picture.
Yeah. Or the, you know, police and, more so the insurance companies. Before they pay out on a claim, especially if it's motor vehicle or whatever, they want to see the phone records.
Yep.
They want to see if you were on that phone at the time of that accident.
Yep.
You know, it's one thing if it was after, but, you know, if it was during that time and somebody accuses you of being on the phone and they can prove it and subpoena the records, you know, and prove that you were on it, How many years ago was it? Three or four with those five high school students?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Fairport girls.
Yeah, the Fairport girls. Yeah. And unfortunately, they were texting, sadly.
Well, and that's...
Well, and it may not even be the driver that's texting, but there's been issues with too
they
many...
They take their eyes many, off the well, road got, to see what the person's got next too, to them. Right? Oh, look what he wrote.
Too many
and they
kids
take their
in
eyes
the car.
Off.
I've heard of some communities that are banning multiple teenagers in the same car. Because they screw around with each other. You got three kids in the back seat and the distracting the driver.
Yeah. I mean...
As long as they can... Well, no.
I have a much different attitude about this now than when I was that teenager.
Yeah.
We packed as many people into that... I drove a clown car.
Yeah.
I had a car that fit 12, more people
12,
than
13
there were
people.
Seats.
Yeah, we could fit three people. People lying in the back window.
Exactly.
It was the 70s. I had a big car.
And we did. And we... drove everywhere and joked and laughed and hung out of the windows and everything.
And if you got hurt, it was your own damn fault.
And if and if my daughter did that today, I would
She'd
lock her
dead.
In her room till she was 90.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I found out stuff about my daughters.
Yeah. I keep telling my daughter I don't want to know.
Dude, I found this out through another friend. Oh, yeah, did you know Amy did this and that? No, and I guess I'd rather not know some of this stuff.
Just look on her Facebook page.
Well, that's what I told my daughter. I said, look,
you
tell me when I should stop looking at your Facebook page. Because, seriously, there are things I don't need to know.
You know what? Sweet revenge. My one daughter, Amy, God love her. she'll sit there. But now her daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Is coming back to cause her to. And I sit back and I sit there and laugh my butt off. Because she goes, what are you laughing at, Dad? I go, it's just you in reverse.
She tells me, shut up. 7 or 8 times a day, I hear my mother laughing in the background. My mother passed many, many years ago, but I can hear her laugh regularly.
Oh, my gosh, I've turned into my parents.
Exactly. Actually, I had the cool parents, so I hope I'm the cool dad. I hope we're the cool parents. Most of my daughter's friends like us, so that's a nice thing. All right, our next caller is our friend Bodan from Rochester, New York. What's up, Bodan?
Hey, gentlemen, since you were talking about technologies of a smartphone and stuff like that, I'm considering purchasing a new television. I'm debating, is it worth the extra money up front now to buy a smart TV? And what would be the features to have one? Maybe it's more logical for me not to have one. Just want to run this idea by you gentlemen and see what type of 45, 50-inch TVs you have, and do any of you have smart ones that you utilize?
Well, there's kind of two alternatives. There's the smart TVs themselves that have like Netflix and Hulu built into the TV, and then there's the set-top boxes like Roku and Apple TV that add the smart function to a dumb TV.
Right.
One of the neat things about both types of devices is they can get updated by the manufacturer. So Apple just updated their Apple TV to add the HBO channel, although due to contract, you still have to have an HBO cable subscription to use HBO Go on your Apple device. But it does allow them to add features later on as something else becomes more popular. So Amazon Instant Prime gets popular.
Well,
they can add that in.
I'm not the kind of person, I may only watch a movie, one movie once a month. I'm not going to sit there every evening watching a movie. And I think the novelty after a while will wear out.
It's especially with movies, it becomes, what do I want to watch now?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to dig through your own video library or look at on-demand different libraries. You've got Netflix, different libraries. So you have more sources to look for content. And especially some of the boxes like Roku, where you've got hundreds more channels. Nick talks about the Kung Fu channel.
Hong Kong Cinema? Yes, there's a Kung Fu channel. I constantly watch my Roku box.
Your TV is not a smart TV. You bought the box.
No, I have about the dumbest TV you can get. In fact, I have to go out and look for a new TV because I want a TV now that has HDMI. That's how dumb my TV is.
Okay.
But I bought the box instead, and that makes the box. There was a special and a deal and a yada, yada, yada. And you're still going to have to pay for this stuff. So the question becomes for me, what was it that you're missing that made you think you want a smart TV?
The capability of watching, movies like from Netflix or something to that effect.
Right. So the question becomes, what do you want to watch from, and what device gives you the most choices?
Mm-hmm. And it's awful hard to buy a non-smart TV these days. Almost all of them have some Netflix
some features like embedded. Mine,
yeah,
mine's a few years old. I've got a 55-inch, but yeah, I can get the Netflix on it. And
some of the other TV specs usually make more of a difference, and then the smart TV kind of hangs along with it. You probably want to look at one that does 120 hertz, which is noticeably better than a 60 hertz refresh rate, which is typical of televisions.
Mm-hmm.
But then some TVs are starting to do 240 hertz. You can't tell the difference between 120 and 240.
Humans
so
can't.
Spend the extra money for the 120, in your opinion, and you know, as far as the LED or plasma.
Well,
plasma
for LED.
Yeah, plasma. They always say is great if you're going to put it down in the basement and there's not much light.
It's blacker blacks. It's better for movies, where the an LCD is a little better for faster action, you know, sports and things like that.
And an LED is brighter.
Right. LCD televisions come in different types of backlighting. This CCFL, cold cathode for fluorescent light, is a little cheaper than the LED backlighting. But the LED backlighting is brighter and uses less power and lasts longer than a fluorescent light.
And the other problem with plasma is that you can burn in a plasma.
Oh, they're not as bad as they used to be.
They're not as bad as they used to be, but if you watch a lot of television, eventually that place in the lower right corner where everybody puts their ID bug
will
eventually
blur out. Well, yeah, I watch the television in my living room, and it's a a fairly bright room, especially in the daytime.
No, then so plasma, you don't want plasma. Plasma, like they say, is great for a theater setting, and it's in a dark room where there isn't much lighting.
Okay, so that's not going to work for me, so I might as well shy away from a plasma and just probably go with an
LED.
Again, from what I was told, that because the viewing distance is going to be maybe in the 10-foot range at the most, probably nothing more than a 50-inch, which I would agree with.
Probably.
Yeah, you don't want to be too close. A friend of mine just moved his apartment. Kid. I love my TV now. I was kind of hating it because it gave me a headache. Well, why? Well, the farthest away I could get was 6 feet, and he's got a 50-inch television.
Oh, yep. Hello.
So now he's like 8-10 feet away, and he says, I love it now. It's not, it's much better. I said, I would think so,
The other spec you'll see on a lot of these is the viewing angle. Off-center, you can view TV at. And the greater the viewing angle, the more expensive the TV will be. There's a technology called eyes-in-plane switching that basically, depending on where you're looking at it, you're seeing a different plane of vision, and so it has a much wider viewing angle than a standard LCD panel. But and some of that's the difference between, in our office we have a 46-inch Sony that was $2,000, versus a 50-inch Vizio that's $800.
Right.
What's the difference? The Sony looks an awful lot better.
But the Vizio is nothing to.
Vizio is sort of one of those up and coming off brands that tends to be pretty good. I've been watching them on Woot.
Other than the capability of getting films like Netflix and stuff like that, is there any other advantage for me to consider a smart TV?
Some of the smart TVs can hook to your television or to your computer wirelessly. Almost all of them have VGA or HDMI to plug into your computer. So, so if you have content on your computer or on your mobile device, being able to connect that wirelessly to your television is handy.
It's a lot of bells and whistles, but how often, in my opinion, am I going to really utilize it to the degree where, maybe I should consider just a decent brand, 50-inch non-smart TV that, has a better, refresh rate.
Yep. And Vizio is actually an American company, which is unusual in the world.
Yeah. I've heard, LG, Panasonic, also good brands.
Yep.
LG is great.
Yeah, I ended up making a mistake a number of years ago. I bought a store brand TV, and even though it has a nice picture, I think you guys talked about this. It's also what's inside that TV. Every 2 months, I have to rescan the channels. It just the channels go away. I have no idea why. No power surges, no power interruptions. They just go away.
Yep. All right, we got to take a break. Good luck.
Thank you.
Let us know what you get. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Mark from Greece on the line. What's up, Mark?
Good afternoon.
It is that. What can we do for you?
I just wanted to make a comment about some plasma TVs.
Sure.
Just some information I realized a few weeks ago when I get Crutchfield's catalog, and you know they always carry some of the higher end stuff.
Right.
And they have a new Samsung plasma that's supposedly 250% brighter than last year's plasmas.
Wow.
They what it says here is that they made the cells of each pixel bigger. So there's less space in between the cells.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
And they're very expensive. I mean, a 51-inch TV is almost $2,000. But it's got everything under the sun.
Well, anything new is you get wait until Christmas time, you know, the Black Fridays. By then, it'll be on sale.
And, last year's TV will now have dropped quite a bit in price.
Yeah.
And I've also noticed that, you know, I've always shied away from plasmas because they're so reflective. And I bought an LG 47-inch LED TV not that long ago. And they're making all these TVs really almost mirror images. You know.
Well, it makes the colors more vibrant when you're looking at it, but adds to a lot more glare, which means you turn off lights and close drapes to make the room darker.
Yeah, so it's not so much of an issue anymore because they're all really pretty reflective.
Yeah.
I originally had bought a Samsung 46-inch TV and experienced the same problem you were talking about. The viewing angle on that TV was maybe 10% off. Off center. If you went more than that,
it used to be horrible. Particularly with those 3D TVs, if you sat three people side by side on a couch, two people on the ends didn't see 3D.
Yeah.
And hardly saw the picture.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
I also noticed that the ones that are matte or finished screen have less of a viewing angle than these ones that are more reflective.
Yep, and that makes sense because the matte is essentially blocking some of that that side light.
Yeah, so my suggestion to anybody looking for a TV, if they're looking for an LED TV, is don't go with a matte finish screen, is my experience.
Good point. Thank you, Mark.
Yep.
Excellent.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Have a good day.
You too.
Thanks.
One of the problems when you go into a store to look at TVs, and you have all these giant TVs in a row, is the harsh fluorescent lighting, and most of the time the TVs were just plugged in and turned on. They weren't set up, you know, very well, and so the color balance is off. That's the old joke about NTSC, the television standard, is never twice the same color.
Yeah, right.
So you look at all those TVs on the wall, and none of them are showing the right colors.
Right.
Or at least the same colors.
And the question is this a lousy TV,
mm-hmm.
or did somebody just get lazy?
Right. Well, then there was, who was it? One of the companies added a yellow pixel and had George Takei doing their commercial.
Right.
It's got a yellow pixel, the quadtron. So instead of three color pixels, they added yellow. I don't know why they picked yellow.
Because that complements the red, the blue, and the green.
Right, and it was probably the easiest new color to make.
Right. Cheapest.
Yeah, that's more likely.
There you go.
Yeah, really.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Harry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Harry? What can we do for you?
Okay, hi. I have a Outlook problem. I can't get my Microsoft Outlook to open. I've just got a white screen, and then I get a message that says, can't find your Outlook data file. Probably a result of deleting a bunch of junk a couple days ago, and the file with it, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And
that's usually
I'm looking at another screen now. It says, create open Outlook data file, and it gives me a space to put file name in for Outlook data file brackets *.pst.
Don't do that yet.
It can't find your data file, so it's asking if you want to make a new one.
Uh-huh.
All right, the first thing you want to do is see if you can find that data file.
It's do a search of your hard drive for *.pst.
And is there anything there?
Can't find it.
Oops.
Okay, that's a problem.
Well, in the Windows search, you have to turn on search inside invisible or hidden directories.
Hidden files.
Because normally the Outlook data file is in a hidden folder.
Yep. Oh. Well, hidden files and hidden folders.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you can find it,
yep.
What you want to do is make sure that Outlook is completely shut down.
Right.
And run a program called scanpst.exe.
PST.EXT.
Scan PST.EXE.
Okay.
And that will, and then it will ask you what file do you want, and you give it that full path to the file you found.
That's called the inbox repair tool.
Right. It's called the inbox repair tool.
Oh, full path.
Well, first you search for the PST file, and it will give you the path. C:// whatever. You write that down.
Oh, right.
Then when you run scan PST.exe, it will say what inbox do you want to repair? And you type in C:// whatever.
Or copy and paste.
Or copy and paste, whatever works for you. And then it will attempt to fix that PST file. Notice that Microsoft knows how bad the PST file is, that they give you, with Outlook, a program to fix it.
Uh-huh.
So you repair that PST file. Now, when you, and then it will give you a name, write that name down too.
Right.
Now you open Outlook and it'll say, well, do you want to make a new file? You say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you give it whatever name you want to give it, I don't care. But when it comes up, it should have two directories there. One is your new empty stuff.
Yeah, a new folder for the file.
And the old folder, the other folder will be all your old mail, which you can then move over to the new folder.
I would almost suggest
not moving it over.
Well, not getting stop using Outlook. Use Thunderbird or another mail reader.
Yes, definitely.
And it will read once you can repair your inbox, it will read all your old mail out of Outlook and let you use Thunderbird. One of the things that Thunderbird and other mail programs do is every message is one single file.
Mm-hmm.
So if a message gets corrupted, that's the only message you lose. With Outlook and that PST file, all of your mail is in one giant file. So if any bit fails, all of your mail is lost.
Uh-huh.
Right, it's the same idea behind the registry.
Right. Yeah.
Put everything in one file.
Do you have these instructions written down any place in your...
Steve is going to put a link to Microsoft's own website, which talks about this and also gives you a link to... Well, you already have the repair tool.
Okay. I've got the disk, you know, with... Office disk.
It didn't help me. Right. It's nothing to do with the program. The program is running fine. It's your data file that is.
Well, you went in and deleted it, so that's why there's an issue.
It got corrupted.
Okay.
Did I think? Yeah. With all that stuff I got rid of last week.
But it's in a hidden folder, so it's not something you could ordinarily find to delete.
Oh, that's interesting.
Unless you have your hidden folders turned on already.
That search cannot find the .pst file, even when you say search in hidden folders.
Uh-huh.
Then you did indeed delete it, and there's not much that can be done about that. It's gone.
Go to your backup file if you have one.
If you have a backup, then you should open that. But beyond that, I don't really know what to tell you. It's done. If it was a week ago in particular, I'm sure you've overwritten pieces of it already, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially if he's deleted the file.
Yeah. And if you don't mind losing all your old mail, you could let Outlook make a new file and just start over with new mail.
Well, I can't even get into it to start it. So.
Well, that message you said was coming up asking you to create a new mail file, that would start up with a new empty mail file.
I wouldn't mind that. So if I just want to create a new file and start new, I can do that?
You should be able to do that. You won't have any of your old mail ever again, but you can do that.
That's okay, because this is a new machine that I just started to use as a backup. So where it says type in file name over the type of file, which is the PST file.
Right.
What file name would you recommend?
Anything you want
to give it.
Outlook.pst is the common name.
Yeah, or something.
Mail.pst.
Your first name, whatever you want to give it.
And that should start...
Theoretically, that will start a brand new file.
And start Outlook functioning.
Yep.
Well, you know, that sounds like the quick fix.
Yeah, if you don't mind you losing your old email, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, really.
My good useful email's on my XP machine. So this is my 7 machine that I've had a problem with.
And even if you switch to Thunderbird mail reader, that may be able to read the corrupted Outlook file anyway.
Okay, I should look at Thunderbird. I shouldn't... Okay. And that's a free download, I would guess.
Yep.
Okay, so you can give me two solutions. Look at Thunderbird, and then if I don't care about the old stuff, just type in any name for a new file.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
Call it Harry.
And see what happens.
Sure.
Well, thank you. That's I think this quick, simple solutions are those two. And I don't care about the old stuff.
Yeah, as long as you don't care about the old stuff, do it the quick and easy way.
Okay, I just lost my address book. I just have to recreate that. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
I'll send money. Don't worry.
That's what I like to hear.
There we go.
That's what we want. Become a member. You can do it right online. Jazz901.org.
Some people use a corrupted PSD file as a way to start over their mail. Get rid of all the inbox stuff they're not going to read anyway. Get rid of all the email addresses that they don't want to talk to anymore.
We recently moved our mail system from the one that I was running to the one run by the Institute. And I had to go from the 56 gig of mail that I had down to 3. And I've been saving mail since 1998.
Yeah.
You know, there was no reason to get rid of it. We had essentially unlimited space.
Yeah, hard drives are cheap.
And I just got rid of it. Too bad. Some of it was admittedly completely useless.
We see customers all the time that have 10,000 unread messages in their inbox, and they can't bring themselves to delete it.
I did that. I just deleted whole swaths of things. All the stuff I'd been saving from 1998 on was gone. All of that stuff. All right, let's get back to the phones. We've got a few minutes to talk to Roger from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Roger. What's up?
At work, I used to use a Citrix terminal.
Sure. That's old.
Yeah, well. And just recently, I've been moved to a new location, and now I'm connected to a Dell desktop computer. On the Citrix terminal, I had been using a Microsoft ergonomic keyboard.
Sure.
And took that with me. The Dell has, connectors on the back to accept those old, whether they PS1, PS2 plugs.
Yeah.
In addition to the USB, and that USB, you know, the keyboard and mouse that came with it is USB. So I plugged my keyboard in and went into, and I don't remember exactly, the Microsoft control panel.
Sure.
To look for a device to set it up, and it would not find the ergonomic keyboard. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Two. First, the thing I would do first is, two things. First, I would shut the machine down, unplug the USB keyboard, plug in the PS1 keyboard, and then start the machine up.
Okay.
And see if that works. Microsoft can get confused when you suddenly plug a new keyboard in midstream.
Okay, I think I may have done that, but I'm not real sure.
Well, give it a shot, and if it... Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I'd be a little more worried that the Dell doesn't include drivers for the PS1 port, even though they're physically there.
Right, that was the second thing that I was going to say, is it may not have a port for that.
You can get a cable adapter to convert that to USB, or just get a USB ergonomic keyboard.
Right, I personally also use an ergonomic keyboard because it cuts down on the pain from my carpal tunnel significantly. But they're only about $50. And to me, it's worth it. So I just bought one. I bought a USB one and plugged it in.
Okay.
Done.
Well, here's a neat one. Like Apple used to sell an ergonomic keyboard that actually split in the middle. And you could control the angle it was at. And you could control the elevation it was at. There's one called ErgoRise for $120. But it splits in the middle. And so you can angle it in three dimensions.
Also, the look on anybody else's face when they try to use your keyboard is priceless, really.
Yeah,
so if you back to the standard keyboard and trying to type with that, I think I'm feeling it in my arm.
Yes, you are. There's no question.
Yeah.
The ergonomic keyboards are much, much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you hold your arms in front of you, even with your palms flat, is an unnatural feeling. You know, if you rotate your palms, you know, about 60, 70 degrees, that feels a lot better. And so some of these ergonomic keyboards will stand up in the middle like a tent. And,
right,
and
even just a few degrees is good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my suggestion to you would be get work to buy you a new keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Or buy it yourself. It's well worth it to keep your hands and arms healthy.
Going back to you mentioning that Dell might not have put the drivers in, would there be any way of getting a driver?
Offhand, I don't know, but let me look that up. We have to take a break. We'll look that up during the break. You can go ahead and hang up, but we'll talk about it when we come back. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. We're taking a slightly longer break because you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this. But we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Show Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of Soundbites. And Steve has something to say to Roger from Rochester, who was looking for a USB, or rather drivers for a PS2 keyboard.
We forgot to get his model number. But if you go to the Dell website and go to support, you can enter the service tag, which is a sticker on the back of the computer, and that will take you to all of the drivers for that specific model. One of our questions was whether his old keyboard was the small round PS2 connector or the bigger round AT connector. And it's much, well, depending on how old the Citrix terminal was, it was probably PS2. Rather than the AT connector, but I've seen keyboards that still have the old AT connector, and people love the feel of that mechanical keyboard. We've talked about that in the past, where you can get a mechanical clickety keyboard in USB now for newer computers.
But you can find the drivers for your system through Dell. All you have to do is put the model information in there. Steve's putting a link at soundbites.org in the forums. So, or rather as a post in the system. And that's fine. But equally, honestly, instead of spending hours and hours and hours doing that, hoping it'll work, go get a new keyboard. You get a brand new keyboard out of the deal. They're only $50, even if you pay for it out of your pocket. For me, $50 is worth it to keep the pain away from my hands and wrists.
Yeah, really?
So I personally don't have a problem with doing that. And that's what I would do.
There's even a couple in the Logitech family that are in the $40 range.
Right.
But Logitech and Kensington and are two big keyboard manufacturers. Microsoft does have their own natural keyboard now. In fact, some of the companies call it a natural keyboard instead of an ergonomic keyboard.
Right.
I guess someone patented ergonomic or something.
Yeah. How do you?
Or somebody calls theirs economic, so God knows Microsoft can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have the Natural Keyboard Pro, I believe, is the one I have. I have one at work and one at home. I love it because I can type for hours without pain in my hands. If I have to take out my Chromebook or whatever to go somewhere, after a while, it hurts.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and then,
that's the way it works.
Wired versus wireless is a decision people are making these days. It's nice not to have the wires dangling. But then you have to keep changing batteries.
I have never in my life had a
all these wires we have among us now.
Yeah, right. I've never had a wireless keyboard that didn't fail at exactly the wrong time.
Yeah.
Nope. Exactly the wrong time.
The other keyboard which didn't catch on too fast was, you know, you could roll out a mat.
I have one of those.
Yeah,
I love
and the Vision.
Got a couple of those.
The Vision, yeah, you could just.
We sell those a lot with iPads because it's small and easy to carry.
Just roll it up. And
yep.
Velcro it in, you know, in a tight wad, and
yep. I have one of those that's USB. If I had one that was Bluetooth, I would be much happier because it would be again. You got batteries.
We have a Bluetooth one at the office.
Excellent. Yeah. That's good to know.
Here's a $200 gaming keyboard. It's got a zillion extra keys on it, and there's an LCD screen on the keyboard. that you can have like your HUD mapped to it for playing the game.
Nice.
Now that should be considered cheating. When I go into a game and get killed in 5 seconds.
It's all about the gear you bring.
Yep.
To the game, there's no question to that. But yeah, I would for Roger, I would look into just getting a new keyboard.
Speaking of those games, I got hooked on that stupid Candy Crunch.
Oh, stop! It's a horrible. It's the crack. It's the crack. Yeah. I don't play.
No, but you know what? After playing this one level, and there's a lot of other folks stuck at this level 65. Just looking at it, because a lot of these I can figure out patterns. It's just part of me, you know, as far as programming and all that right. type of stuff. This one, there is no real pattern, but there is. The pattern is they want you, because they keep pushing up and saying, well, you can buy these extra mm-hmm. lives and everything else. Oh, gee, guess what? That costs you money.
Real money.
So
yeah.
they get you up to that point, and you think, oh, I should be able to do this one. Well, after 3 weeks being stuck on this one level, I ain't paying for it. So you know what? I'm ready to say, chuck it.
That's right. Game's done.
Game over, you know? But because I refuse to.
It's the whole idea.
Google how to clear the level and you'll find it. Yeah.
The first taste is free, then you pay. All right, listen, over the past few days, a notable number of users have complained about Wi-Fi issues plaguing the new 11-inch and 13-inch MacBook Air models released during the week of WWDC. Besides less battery-intensive chipsets, the marquee feature of the new MacBook Air revolves around faster Wi-Fi connectivity thanks to the new 802.11ac cards. As with any new product, bugs are plausible. Reports originally claimed that the MacBook Air Wi-Fi issues are due to networking issues in Apple's OS X software. Clearly, Apple is not in the dark about this issue. According to a source at Apple, the company is working to independently identify what exactly is causing the new Wi-Fi-related problems. According to the source, AppleCare and Apple Store Genius Bar employees have been instructed to, quote, capture, unquote, affected MacBook Air units. These units will then be sent back to Apple for further testing, so a solution could hopefully be achieved. While Apple is asking AppleCare and Genius Bar staff to capture units facing problems, that does not mean Apple is confirming the new MacBook Air is flawed. This points to Apple pushing to determine why at least some units are seeing Wi-Fi problems. Separately, reports state that at least a couple of customers facing MacBook Air Wi-Fi issues have successfully swapped out their notebooks for new ones. One of these people has said that AppleCare provided them with a complimentary USB to Ethernet adapter so the new MacBook Air could connect to the internet without Wi-Fi, which, of course, obviates the entire reason for getting a MacBook Air. Apple also informed these people that their original laptops had been captured. What do you think Apple means by captured? Why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I love the creative terminology.
We're investigating the reports of
right.
problems.
Yeah, so. Right.
And we do it by capturing the laptop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or capturing the.
And packets, I got some swampland for you yeah. too.
No, I think but they're taking the laptops away from people.
Yeah, well, they're being replaced under warranty. You know, it's a warranty product, so you get a new one under warranty. And it's one of the problems with any brand new technology is it's yeah. always rough to be the first guy to get it.
Yeah. Adam Osborne said it best: pioneers are the people with the arrows
in the back, and that's why we always, telling folks, you know. How bad do you really have to have it?
Right.
Yeah, even the first generation of a new product, you know, wait maybe 6 months and for the first revision to come out. Because you never know what's going to get fixed later on. You know, let someone else find the problems.
You're right.
Especially if you're doing business critical, you know, work on it.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. How are you today?
I'm okay. How are you guys doing?
Peachy, thanks. What's up?
Every day I get an email that always goes in my junk mail, and I click on not junk, and I read it. And the next day, same thing. It always goes to junk mail. Is there any reason why, or is there something I'm doing wrong?
Add the sender to your address book, and that should prevent it from going in the junk mail.
Okay. I'm using Outlook.com. How would I do that, Steve?
No, there should be a button that says add to address book.
Or can't you, when you get one of those mails?
He says it says not junk, but it's not learning that isn't junk.
Hmm. Yeah, then it's in this junk. It's got to be able to edit that.
Yeah. Well, is it from a person, or is it an advertisement that you want?
Well, I got a Kindle Fire HD, and it's a site called Kindle Nation Daily. They send me free books you can get and stuff.
A lot of people would consider that spam.
Oh.
Getting junk mail from someone wanting them to buy books.
Well, I asked for the...
Right, and so that's the problem with a junk mail filter, is it's hard to tell what some people think is junk because some people may not. So that's why the not junk filter should learn eventually. But the problem is it may be coming from different sources, even though it's one company.
Yeah.
And so adding them to your address book should always consider it not junk.
So just add the site to my address book.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember my Microsoft login ID.
I don't know.
I don't remember. But somewhere in there should be an add to address book or add to contacts, maybe. Some places call it contacts.
That's okay. Where it's so easy, though, in Foxfire. I just sit there.
Yeah, I'm in Firefox.
Or Thunderbird, rather, and say, mark it. It's no longer junk.
Wait, you're in Firefox?
Yeah.
But he's at Outlook.com.
Yeah, he's Outlook.
The website for the webmail.
But Thunderbird allows you, if you've marked something junk, you could unmark it just by clicking on it and say, this is no longer junk.
Well, Outlook does the same thing. It's just we got to find where that is. Well,
Microsoft doesn't do anything. Simple. Yeah.
The problem is between Outlook.com and Outlook, the help keeps pointing to the Outlook program and not the Outlook.com website.
Right. It's in there somewhere, and I'm sorry. I don't have a... an ID on Outlook.com. Actually, I'm in Steve's boat. I don't remember it off the top of my head.
Okay, Nick, it says newsletter at KindleNationDaily.com. If I put that in my contacts, you think that will take care of it?
Theoretically, it is supposed to.
Okay, I'm going to add it manually then, because it's not.
Why not?
It can't be in there. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Maybe even click or right-click on the from in the message, and then you might get a contextual menu saying add to contacts. Might.
Oh, okay.
Can't hurt to try.
All right, thank you very much.
Yep. And by the way, over here in the Hangout, the Google Hangout, Richard says his girlfriend is on level 226 of Candy Crunch and not paid a dime.
Yep. I've read
266. That. Excuse me. I deleted 40 levels of hers.
Yep. I've read that some of the game companies have gotten into trouble for not allowing a completely free walkthrough, that you're forced somewhere to buy something. And what was the one just came out recently? It wasn't Real Racing. It was another one they're talking about, maybe Plants vs. Zombies 2, where the freemium model that has become so popular, where you get the game for free and then you have to buy stuff in-game later to finish it. The more responsible game companies are making sure there is at least a way to get through it without paying. And it may be a horribly difficult way to get through, but
this one stupid level that I'm at.
Richard says his girlfriend's at level 266 and hasn't paid a dime. 266, you slacker. You're at what, 65?
Yes.
Along 266.
With about 15 other of my friends at Geek Abyss. It's just frustrating.
266.
Oh, bite me.
I can't help it. It's not me. It's his girlfriend who's on level 266. Personally, I would say
my daughter,
she should get
my
out
daughter, my daughter's over on a level 100-something, and it's like, really?
266, mister. How do you even have 266 levels?
I mean, I didn't need it. I haven't gotten past 65.
Isn't there a point at which the guy who wrote the thing says, yeah, I think we're done now?
I don't know. A lot of games will keep adding new levels over time.
As they create them. They got to get more folks up to that and then demanding more.
Right.
There are others like us that are still down under the hundreds.
Yeah. I'm
because we do have somewhat of a life.
Personally, in Candy Crunch, I'm at level zero, and I will stay at level zero. That is to
your wife.
Till
your wife keeps saying, "Send me live. Send me live."
No. My wife does not play Candy Crunch. No, what my wife wants me to do is to get a thing on Castleville so she can use my ID. That's what she wants to do.
No, see, I keep getting requests. Send lives. I run out of lives. I was like, go to bed.
That's right. That's right. Losing all those lives is God's way of telling you turn off the computer.
And it's time to go to bed.
All right. Our next caller is Al from Greece, New York. Welcome, Al. What's up?
Oh, hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Good. Clearly, we are exercising our arteries. What can we do for you?
Well, I just wanted to state my opinion on what you guys said about Apple being what you call it. I'd say captured as being like taken away or they stole something.
Yep.
Well, if
you've been captured, it's usually captured and held hostage, right? Or captured and imprisoned.
Right,
yeah.
Right. You're right, except I think if they give you a new one in return, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
And yet they still seem like it's a bad thing.
The word, I think, is not a good one.
Okay. Yep. But I also called because I'm also seem to have in trouble as well because I know I can trust you guys.
Yeah, okay.
The trouble is I've been having trouble recording some things with my internal mic. You see, I've been trying to disable it and everything for an external mic, but the trouble is I don't know where to do it. Because I tried to take it over to Staples, but the trouble is they're making me pay $50 just so they can do it themselves.
What program are you recording with?
Audacity, sir.
There should be a pull-down menu about to pick your input source.
Oh, there is?
Yeah, hold on. We're going to take stay on the line. Do not hang up. We have to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Al from Greece, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We might as well talk now. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Hey, and at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Al on the line. But well, you wanted to say something first?
No, I was just going to say, it's Rob's fault. He puts that music in there.
That's right.
It's That's hard right. not to stand still.
Might as well jump.
There you go.
There you go.
We were complying to the music, telling us what to do.
All right. Al, are you still there?
Yep, I'm still here.
All right. There is in Audacity. I was going to start Audacity, and instead I sang.
I started Audacity when we went to break. It finally finished launching.
You have 400 things running simultaneously.
I know.
You think?
But yeah, in underneath the toolbar on the left-hand side, there is a pull-down menu as to which input device you want to record from.
Okay, sorry about that, because I'm new with this, because I just started with a band, so I'm just getting into this now.
Yep.
But the first thing you want to do when you pick a program like Audacity, which has an amazing number of capabilities, is pay careful attention to everything that's on the screen. And in fact, as Steve says, next to the...
The icon looks like a microphone.
Right, next to the icon microphone is the... pull down. He's got a pull down on his that tells you what it is that you should be using for an input.
Right. Which input device?
So you can pick the one you want, and it should work fine.
And then one of the tricks on most PC audio cards, there's two input jacks. There's one that's line level, and there's one that's mic level. And you want to make sure that you get the right connection for the device you're actually connecting. On the Mac, the input jacks are all line level, so you can't plug an unpowered microphone in because the level's not high enough. You need a powered microphone or a mixer board, and that's because it's a line input. But a lot of the PC cards, what are the colors? It's blue and green, and there's the third one is pink for the microphone. So there's a microphone in, there's line in, and there's headphone out.
Yeah, line out.
Headphone out and line out. So you may have four connector jacks on the back of the PC.
Okay. I happen to see the four, okay.
Yeah, and the icons on them are really, really tiny. The two of them will have arrows in.
Yeah, they're not labeled well at all.
Yeah, and two of them often will have an arrow pointing into the speaker cone that the icon is, and two will have arrows pointing out. But you may have to check the manual to see which is the line in and which is the mic in.
Okay, I will do that.
Yeah, and once you've got that, and once you've then set the correct input, you should be able to get whatever you need.
All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Good luck.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Boy, is he misled. He called us gentlemen. Yeah.
Well, and there's some really cool audio things you can get. You can get a mixer board where you can have several microphones at once plugged into the computer. And there's a lot of USB mixer boards where each microphone shows up as a separate track in your recording program so that you can adjust the level separately. So if you've ever seen a radio or TV studio, you know, that giant mixer board that someone's already sitting at, you can mimic that inside the computer. And there's a lot of really cool audio programs that do that. The Macintosh comes with a mixing program called GarageBand that lets you create music as well as learn to play music.
That's an amazing thing. Those mixer boards, so they look so overwhelming. Whoa. But once they're set up, usually don't touch them. It's, you know, just working the various mics and that type of stuff. The rest of the knobs and dials, very seldom do you have to, you know, work around those.
Yeah, Linux has a couple of audio distributions, which actually you run them as your operating system, and they are essentially there. There's a couple of variations on the word studio and a couple of others that you can actually download.
I got only 64 audio.
Studio, Dream Studio, blah, blah, blah.
But once you get them set up, though, you know, it might look intimidating. Like I was just saying, you know, it might look intimidating. But once you get it set up, you're set. You don't have to play around with it. You might be, you know, if you got the multiple mics, just playing with those mics. But it's getting the other tops parts tuned in to where you want the various levels. So don't get frustrated at that because I've had a phone. Oh, that was too much. Well, yeah. If you want it to sound decent, you got to put a little time in. One program, though, that I still love and use, and you know it very well, is Total Recorder.
Love it.
Yep. One of the tricky things we run into here on the show is I do an audio recording of the broadcast, and then we edit it and upload it to the archives. Since it's a live show, if something went wrong, you can't go back and fix it.
Right. So I'm always joking, we'll fix it in post.
Fix it in post.
Yeah, no, we're live.
Well, and that's why if you ever sit through the credits at a movie, there's this huge list of section in the credits called ADR, Automatic Dialogue Replacement, or Additional Dialogue Recording sometimes. And generally what happens is after the movie is shot and they're going through editing process, they bring back all the actors to sit in a sound booth and re-record their audio while they're watching the video on screen. So they're trying to lip sync back to themselves,
right?
And this because is, you know, a train went by, or there was a, you know, a horn in the background, or something happened that the audio couldn't be captured
right.
well.
When they're recording in a studio, that's not an issue.
Yeah.
But when they're recording outdoors, in particular, or for example, in a hotel lobby or whatever, there's an amazing amount of noise going on in the background,
all around. Yeah.
And usually they don't use microphones on the actors. There's a boom mic, so there's always a guy holding a giant boom, and that's one of the things you can sometimes see in the bloopers of movies is the boom
dipped down
the mic
too far,
got
or
down
they,
into frame,
the camera got too high,
because they don't want to put a microphone right on the actor because then that would spoil the movie. But that would give the sound guy would love to have microphones on every actor.
Yeah. What blooper did I see where the sound guy it was a traveling shot. People were walking and the sound guy tripped and poked one of the actors right in the eye with the end of the boom. I forget what it was. It'll come to me, but nobody got hurt.
Yeah. No.
Okay. So therefore it was actually pretty funny.
Humorous.
There's a little outtake from Lone Ranger on the iTunes trailer site where Tonto is riding Silver for some reason, and the Lone Ranger's on the back, and they go up a hill, and he falls off the horse. And Johnny Depp goes, "Blooper!" Apparently, Johnny Depp stays in character, because there's a couple of behind-the-scenes vignettes that have come out from Lone Ranger, and even when the camera's not rolling, he is still Tonto.
Yep. Yeah, he's a method guy.
Yep.
That looks... that starts Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yep.
Went and saw Superman. That was pretty good.
I'm very angry with my daughter. She went to see the Shakespeare thing, the Joss Whedon Shakespeare movie, without me.
Huh?
I was very upset about that.
Don't know that one.
Oh, yeah. I suddenly can't think of the name. Dogberry.
We know
Benedict and Beatrice. Come on.
We know everything Joss Whedon. Well, now that he's big time, he's mainstream now.
Yeah. Suddenly the name has escaped me, suddenly. I don't know why. Much Ado About Nothing. Thank you, D. Much Ado About Nothing. It just was gone from my head. And she went to see it without me. Angers me.
Yeah, I know it. Usually you two
Greg Clark is in it.
Go to the late movies.
Nathan Fillion is in it.
Oh, it's all his Alexis Denisoff and Amy Acker. It's all his. It's everyone from Firefly and Buffy and Angel. It's all his. All
Dollhouse,
guys.
Everybody. It's everybody.
So whenever Joss makes a movie, anyone who's ever been in one of his old shows, hey, Josh, I hear you're making a movie. Joss, can you get me in your movie? And,
right.
and he does.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. Maybe I can talk my daughter into going to see it twice because she loved it. She was raving about it.
Uh-huh.
Alexis Denisoff did such a great English accent in Buffy and Angel that I didn't know he was from like Wyoming. Or
yeah, right.
When you see these people in a big role and then suddenly they have a different accent somewhere else, that's interesting.
Right. Just going talking about seeing the movie again, though, quite often, you know, if I've seen one, somebody says, hey, have you seen it? But I don't mind going back and seeing a movie right. again mm-hmm. because too movie. Often you miss a lot.
Yep, yep.
You know,
yep.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to Much Ado.
That's only in one theater near here.
Yep. All right. You've got an Android phone. Do we have somebody waiting in the line?
Nope.
Okay. You've got an Android phone, an Android tablet, and maybe even an Android laptop. But be honest with yourself, your affection for Google's mobile operating system knows no bounds, and you won't rest until it's powering literally every computer you own. If this description fits you, HP's newly announced Slate 21 is for you. It's a 21.5-inch, 1920x1080 kickstand-toting all-in-one equipped with NVIDIA's Tegra 4 SoC and running Android 4.2.2. We don't know a lot more about it, which it was announced Monday morning at an HP event in Beijing, but allegedly it also includes an HD webcam, integrated speakers, HP's wireless direct printing technology. We don't know anything about pricing, availability, whether the desktop will even come to the U.S., but the rumor is that it'll be rolled out in multiple countries eventually. Perhaps in an effort to offer cheaper machines without expensive Windows licenses or Intel processors, the PC OEMs are increasingly beginning to experiment with Android in form factors one wouldn't normally expect. The HP Slate 21 follows the previously announced HP Slate X2 convertible laptop, which is itself reminiscent of Asus's long-running Transformer Pad series. Asus is also responsible for a few other Android-equipped curios, including both an all-in-one computer and an upcoming laptop that have full Android tablets inside their detachable screens. So, do you want a Slate 21? How much do you think it should cost? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Well, you know it's got to be somewhat price competitive. It can be a little bit more because of all that it does.
Well, and if they're not paying the Intel premium and they're not paying the Windows premium, Android is free.
Yep.
Yep.
It would be like putting Linux on it, which I don't know why they don't do that. But there you have it. It's a less expensive to build,
mm-hmm.
so it's going to be less expensive to buy.
Yeah, but the other features, though, video camera.
High-end video camera.
I mean, there's where they can, the other tweaks that they could nail you, as far as, it is, can do this, and it can also do this and that. So that's where I'm saying it might bump the price up, but nothing unreasonable.
But we're right back to the thing we've been saying for the longest time. 90% of people live their life in their browser.
True.
You don't need more than the Chrome OS. You get your mail through your browser. You play your Candy Crush through your browser.
Mm-hmm.
You browse through your browser. You connect with people via text message, typing or via video through your browser.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need. So if you can also play games or have other apps, and yet you still have your browser, Chrome, if you're on an Android mm-hmm. tablet or Dolphin or any one of the others, to do all that other stuff. Honestly, seriously, for most people, what more do you need?
True.
There will always be people, and particularly kind of geeks who listen up. I could never use an Android as my thing because I do X and Y.
You're not going to please all the people all the time.
It's not about you. It's not about you. Sometimes it's not about you. I have a friend who is a programmer. And he's spending all day long staring at a bunch of windows with programs and running.
I remember those days.
He'll never, ever use an Android. I get that. But his mother needs nothing more. And there's a whole lot more of his mother out there than there is of him.
Exactly.
And that's what these people are saying is if you can convince people that they don't need Windows. And what's a good way to do that? Well, you use a product like Android. Everybody's heard of it.
Yep.
Everybody knows it. It's on 70% of the phones in the world. If you can say, you know how you use that for everything now? You can have an app for Facebook. You can have an app for...
You don't need to know the operating system.
Exactly.
You can put it on there. And, well, like I was going back to tell you before, and I said this a number of weeks ago, my girlfriend got a... what was it? The
Nexus
iPod.
7.
The iPod.
No. Oh, the iPod tablet.
Yeah.
I don't know jack about Macs.
The iPad mini.
Yeah.
The iPad
I didn't need to called. Because that's where tablets, whether it's Mac or it's PC, you don't need to know the operating system. All you need to know is how to pull down apps. Like you said, I can get an app to do my mail. I can do anything and everything, whether I want to GPS anything. Like you were saying, you don't have to type anymore. You can speak into it. And it will type very well. It can recognize punctuation and everything else. It does a great job of it, along with having the cloud, you know, my G Drive. Off my tablet, I can get to any documents or pictures that I want to off this little tablet, and it doesn't matter where I am.
Yep. Now they're saying it's, what, $400
now? It's $400.
The new price?
How did they get a 21-inch touch screen LCD plus everything else for $400?
Because they're HP. They make 100 million of them. So they get them for a dollar a piece.
Yeah.
They're not paying the Microsoft tax. They're not paying the Intel tax.
Yep.
And they can sell it at a lot cheaper than they normally would.
Yep. A couple of the blog sites are saying it would be at least $200 more if they had to put Intel and Microsoft on it.
That's exactly right.
But even then, a 21-inch touchscreen for $400, I wouldn't mind just the screen to hook into my current computer.
Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
For $400, it's actually worth
it. A touchscreen, even.
It's a $400 touchscreen.
Yeah.
21-inch touch, 21.5-inch.
Yeah.
Touchscreen. I don't know how you beat that.
It was like there was an early Windows 8 commercial where the little girl was finger painting on a big Sony LCD, and mom picked it up and carried it over and laid it down, and it became a tablet.
Right.
Oh, and no one cared about Windows 8, but everyone, all the comments in the blogs, oh, what's that computer? What's that? That's a cool computer. Yeah. You pick it up and carry it.
Yeah. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break while we drool over the new HP Slate. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, who's ever waiting on the phone, and all of you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. It's 41 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we have Lynn from Clymer on the line. Hi, Lynn. What's up?
I just called to maybe inform you, if you are familiar, Avast now has... to my knowledge, it never had it before until recently. A what they call boot time scanner.
Yep.
But personally, I call it a pre-boot scanner.
Yeah, it's before Windows boots.
Yep.
Yeah, it's find any rootkits.
People that have been calling over the last several months, they got really old computers, and they can't really afford to take them in to get them cleaned up. That might be very helpful for them to know about that. If they got enough power to run a vast, no, I don't know. Some of those old machines are probably
that's the problem.
And there lies the challenge. But yeah, what they're trying to do, Lynn, in an effort to get rid of these root kit, viruses or Trojans, actually. They're not a virus, they're a Trojan because they want to take over your machine. Viruses used to just do nasty stuff, erase files, and that. Trojans
self-replicate.
And spyware want to, take over your machine and direct you to other websites and do a lot of nasty stuff, spoof you into thinking that you need to buy this particular program because your machine is infected.
Use your cloud storage for their own uses. The big thing, however, Lynn, is that it's kind of hit and miss. If it loads before the root kit virus loads, then it can clean it out. But if the root kit virus loads first, then it can't. So it might take two or three or four times to find one and clean it out, two or three reboots.
Well, you aren't logged in when this mounts, so it... I don't know where it runs from, whether it's a little temporary file that's put on the machine or whether it actually goes back to
Looks like DOS when it's running.
Yeah, right. In every machine, there is a file that says what runs in what order. And it will try to put itself first. So will the rootkits.
Okay.
So, like I said, most of the time it will win, but it may not necessarily win every time.
Well, anyway, it was just an idea that I thought might help some people that were really in trouble, because there's a lot of people got problems.
No, it's a great idea, Lynn. Thank you.
Yep, very welcome.
Yep.
I had a customer with the Department of Justice ransomware Trojan the other week, and it took a lot of scans with a lot of programs to get everything cleaned off. And I had pulled the drive out and was using it. I was using it in a virtual Windows on a Mac, just so it wouldn't potentially infect another PC.
Right.
But one thing I did find is a lot of the rootkit scanners, they assume you're running it on your C drive, that you're booted from the infected machine. So I'm trying to figure out how to get, like TDS killer. Well, no, don't look at the C drive. Look at the E drive, because that's the infection.
Right. And a lot of people are always saying to me, oh, the Security Tango is so complex. It's got so many pieces and parts. Yes. And the reason is that there are some things that just don't die from other programs. You need, if you're lucky, any one of the programs will catch everything. But the reality is that none of the programs catch every... If you're lucky, one of the programs might catch everything you've got.
Yeah.
But the reality is that none of the programs catch everything that's out there, and I can't guarantee that any one program is going to catch what you've got at any time.
Yeah, this customer had Norton installed, and he was on the phone with Symantec, and they told him erase his hard drive, and that will clear it off.
Yes,
it will.
Right.
And that will get you off the phone, which is their goal.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yep.
That may be the easiest way, but it's not the best way, because you'll lose all of your data.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Bill. What can we do for you?
I have a couple Apple questions.
Sure.
I got an iPhone 5, and when you use the phone, you have your recent call list.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
This phone doesn't store nearly as much as my old kind of smartphone. And is there a way to increase that storage?
Add them to your address book rather than leaving them in recent calls.
Oh, okay.
So that will actually give you more.
Yeah,
in the list?
Your address book is virtually unlimited just by the disk space in the phone.
Yeah.
But recent calls only goes back if I don't have an iPhone myself.
Yeah, maybe 100 calls or something less than that. And it does like 4 or 5 days for me, and I needed something from a week ago and couldn't. I was just trying to find
Right, but if you add them to your address book, they will always be there at least, even if they're not in the recent call list.
Somewhere along the way, the iOS and macOS too changed the address book to contacts. So depending on what version of the system you're running, it could say address book.
This is contacts.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so how would you do that, though?
When you go into your history, I'm actually trying to find a picture of it here. When you go into the history and bring up one of your phone calls in history, there should be a button that says add to contacts. And either add to an existing contact or make a new contact of that entry.
Yeah, well, here, let's see. FaceTime, send message, share contact, add to favorites. Well, I don't necessarily want the...
Wait, add to favorites?
They already have it in contacts. What I want is to actually save the call so I have a record of when someone called me.
Oh, then, okay, in that case, you want to export your call history.
Oh, okay.
And I have to change my Google search to figure out how to do that.
I have a great program. I don't know if a version exists for the Apple computers, but it's a great program for Android that actually keeps track of all my phone calls.
Oh.
And puts them in my Google Calendar.
Oh, that's cool.
Automatically. So I can go to my Google Calendar and say, oh, at 11:15, I called Bill from Irondequoit.
Yeah, okay.
I called Bill, and, you know, you'll be in my address book.
Yeah.
And at 2:45, Mary called me.
Oh, okay.
And it seems to be completely automatic. The first version I bought, I had to do it by hand every once in a while. But lately, every time I look, they're all up to date, so they must have had an update that I just...
Nice. And what was the name of this?
I'm trying to find it. Because it runs by itself now,
I don't know
the name of it. Steve will talk while I look.
Do you have a Mac or Windows computer?
I have an iPad, but we also have a Windows computer.
Okay. Because I did find a couple of Mac programs that will export the call history from your iPhone.
Okay.
One called PhoneView and one called iExplore.
Okay.
But if you Google iPhone export call history, you should be able to find different programs to do that on Windows as well as Mac.
Now, I have a question about the cloud a little bit, iCloud, okay?
Okay, quickly.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. How do you delete a file from your iCloud account?
You delete it in the program you created it in. iCloud is used to synchronize files between your devices.
Yeah.
So if you delete it on the device, it deletes it from the cloud.
Oh, okay, fine. So I have a video on my phone that took almost all my iCloud memory. If I delete it on my phone, then it automatically...
Okay, that's not iCloud syncing. That's PhotoStream.
Okay.
You go into the photo app. There should be an edit button.
Yeah.
And a trash can.
Oh, okay, fine.
All right.
Great, thank you.
Yep.
There you go. That was easy. I can't figure out which program it is that does this. Doggone it. I know I have it. It's running in the background, but I just don't know which one it is. I will find out. I will post it in the forum somewhere and we'll
call log export. I find at the Google Play Store.
No, this is not something I have to touch. This is something that's running all the time. So I'm looking at my running programs, which will tell me this. And as I look through it, I see that the name is not there. It's calling itself Sync something or other, but that's not what it's actually named. I am running a couple of news programs that I never look at, so that's useful to me, I'm sure. All right, I will find it. I will post it at some point. We are apparently done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, all those of you who called in. If you did not get through to us, call earlier next week, and that'll be useful. But we're done for another week. We'll be back here next week, same bat time, same bat channel. You are listening to Sound Bites. We're the longest running computer show in the known universe, and we're here every week. Why? Because you asked for it. How does that work? Well, we are member supported here at Jazz 90.1, and we do what our members would like us to do. So the easiest way to affect what you hear on this station is to become a member, and you can do that online, of course, at jazz901.org. While you're doing that, you can listen to the best German music you'll hear all week. George is coming in to play that, and we'll be back next week on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.